For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, as always, Ed Jordanic. Also joining us from IndyNation.com, Mike Coffey. All right, fellas, this is definitely uncharted waters in that we're doing a podcast on the number one football team in the United States. Can't say that that's ever been the case in doing this show. So, you know, let's just jump right to the hot topic of the day. I mean, I think Coffey, certainly the pundits before the game, or I should say before Saturday night, had Notre Dame looking as the odd guys out with no chance whatsoever of getting to the national championship game. Now, fast forward it, we are talking about how it's probable USC is going to upset Notre Dame, and therefore everything's going to be in disarray. As things stand right now, what are your thoughts? What do you think the chances are for Notre Dame to, number one, beat USC, and then whoever they face, which is likely going to be an SEC team, probably Alabama, what do you think their chances are winning the national championship?
Well, I think I think the chances of a win on Saturday are very good, although I think among the three of us, we could probably spout off years off the top of our heads where highly ranked ND teams went out to Los Angeles and played Southern Cal teams that weren't necessarily that good and ended up losing. But I think
there's five of them.
Yeah, exactly. I think right now, I think the chances of a win in Los Angeles are very good. This championships are won on defense, and God knows this is probably one of the best defenses Notre Dame's field, definitely in a while, perhaps like in the top five ever. And I think that Southern Cal's program is in a state of disarray that we really haven't seen in some of those past upsets. You have obviously a mediocre bowl game at best, the realization that that sanctions are really going to start hitting, and I think a lot of players who are starting to think, you know, I've got an NFL career to think about. I'm not going to exert myself for a game that's potentially meaningless. So I think Notre Dame gets out there and punches them in the mouth, and they're going to fold. Now, as far as beating the SEC, I think if you look at the BCS standings, I think it's absolutely ridiculous how highly some of these SEC programs are ranked. Yes, the SEC is a good conference, but some of their teams, I think I read a statistic that Georgia has beat this year two teams with a winning record, two Division I or FBS or whatever we're calling it now, teams with a winning record this year. And yet they're sitting there at number three, and they got absolutely undressed by South Carolina. So the problem is when you have these SEC teams that really only play each other and then a bunch of tomato cans outside of the conference, you really don't know how good they are. And I think there's a confirmation bias going on in these polls where all these SEC teams are ranked so highly based on the fact that the conference the last couple years has had good teams. I'm not scared of any of those SEC teams. I think Georgia is overrated. I think Alabama's a lot like Notre Dame. I think they have a good defense, but not a very good offense. So I think if it's a Notre Dame-Alabama game, I think I read one of the talking heads said, oh, Alabama would be favored by 10 points or something like that. So in other words, they would be favored by more than Oklahoma was. And I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And I think there's too many pollsters out there who need to confirm their early season opinion that, Notre Dame's not there yet, and try to create like it's some kind of fluke that we're here when nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, what do you think, Ed?
Well, I mean, you know, we've been saying, I think, for a month now, or at least, I've been saying that USC is soft, and I know Brian Kelly will never do this, and none of these players will never do this, but Notre Dame is going to kick the crap out of them on Saturday, okay? I mean, seriously, anybody who's watched any football this year knows that USC, I mean, I think that Notre Dame would have won by two touchdowns with Barkley on the field, so it's not any of this Barkley stuff. I agree with Mike Coffey that this is all being ginned up because of people's, you know, early prognostications. I mean, one of the worst things in college football is these preseason polls. That's the only reason it took Notre Dame all this time to get to number one, was because they were behind Kansas State and Oregon going into the season. I think if you watch football, it'd be pretty clear that Notre Dame is better than Kansas State. So, I love the chaos. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these people that wants a multi-team playoff. I think that's what made Saturday just one of the most awesomest days, and not just because Notre Dame was involved.
I agree with that.
So much fun. I mean, it was just, you know, staying up till, you know, that overtime game with Stanford, and, you know, flipping back and forth and all that stuff. I mean, it made it terrific. But Notre Dame will manhandle USC on Saturday. And the fact of the matter is that perception is reality, and the SEC is the king of the college football world in terms of perception and also the reality of their performance in the national championship game over the last half of a decade or 6 or 7 years or whatever it is. So to me, this shapes up as the best possible scenario for Notre Dame, because if they were to play Kansas State for the national championship, the haters would always denigrate it. And look at it as something. I mean, not that I would care, but you know what I mean. They would look at it as something less. So, you know, I want Notre Dame to play. You know, Pickett, Alabama, Georgia. I mean, I want them to play Alabama because they're still, you know, the wide notion is that they're still the best team in college football. You know, so we could, you don't want to argue about that now, but that's what the perception is. So let's go play Alabama and let's see what we can do. And if we come up a little bit short, the fact of the matter is the SEC is still the bar by which you have to overcome to win a national championship. And if we beat them, then we'll shut everybody up, because we'll have taken everybody's best shot and be the only team that's gone 13-0. And don't even talk to me, Ohio State fans, because you're a bunch of cheaters and you don't deserve to be even in this conversation. So,
yeah, I don't.
So, you know, so, not, so that's,
they may lose against Michigan anyway, but
yeah. Yeah. Root for Michigan.
Yeah. I agree. You know, I think that here's why I like what's going on. Number one, I do think that it could be a little bit of a struggle early Saturday against USC, but I tend to agree with you guys. I just don't see that program getting enough from the players and from the coaching staff and so forth to mount any kind of because I do think it would have to be an unbelievable game for USC to knock off Notre Dame. And I don't think they got it in them, but I would say that what is kind of good is at least we're going to get a little bit of a taste of athletes at every single position, which is what you do face in the SEC. They'll get a little bit of that. The other thing is I do think that Lane Kiffin is the kind of guy that is a good enough coach to expose some weaknesses in Notre Dame. And I do think that what you will see is, because they got athletes, one of the things that scares me, because it's a glaring weakness for us, is Everett Golson's inability to tuck the football when he's either under pressure or he's running. And I think that these are guys that will strip the football from you. And I could see a couple turnovers, one, maybe two, where in open space he gets the ball knocked clean from him. Because they're that kind of, they're smart, very athletic. And good coaches do stuff like that. They're able to pinpoint by watching game fills where they see opportunities, and I think that's one of them. I think, having said that, then it bodes well for us heading into the national championship game, because it'll be a little bit of a wake-up call on that end. Expose a couple weaknesses, we shore it up over a month of practice, and I think that's one heck of a game against Alabama, but I don't even know if that's a guarantee. I mean, I think, like you guys are saying, everybody's talking about how great the SEC is. Well, you know what? It may not shock me at all if those guys lose to Georgia, or if even Georgia loses to Georgia Tech. And, you know, we got all kinds of stuff, in disarray. But, you know, from that's the best part about this is we aren't going to be facing a Kansas State team that when we win, everybody's going to say, well, God, those guys didn't even deserve to be in it. Notre Dame got lucky and would have got spanked if they would have played, you know, an SEC team.
I want to just jump on something Ed said real quick. It's funny, Ed, you talk about how SC is soft, something I agree with, by the way. The rumors that were coming out early in the season were that SC really wasn't hitting hard in practice because they were concerned about their depth with the sanctions they have and the scholarship limitations, wanting to keep everybody healthy. They weren't hitting hard in practice. And it takes me back to when we would hear that how Charlie Weiss ran his practices, where we don't want to hit hard in practice, we want to hit hard in the games. But then that was the criticism of those Notre Dame teams, that they were soft, that they really didn't have a lot of toughness and ability to either push themselves on the opponent or stop the opponent from pushing themselves on them. So it's going to be interesting to watch this game and watch SC for the next 2 or 3 years to see if they fall into that trap or if they're already in it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well,
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is that, I mean, you know, the reason that I think we're going to manhandle SC is really very, I mean, it's something to do with, you know, Southern Cal's, you know, deficiencies and that type of thing. But I just think that, you know, that we're playing really, I mean, we're playing the best football in the country right now. I mean, the offense is light years ahead of it, of where it was, you know, when we squeaked out a win over Michigan. You know, the defense has played at a high level all year, and because of that Oklahoma game, and I think that they've got a very good foundation of what to expect against USC. They know how they're going to be attacked. They know what their perceived weaknesses are in terms of, you know, the secondary and keeping guys in front of them and getting behind, you know, that type of thing. So I don't really care who Notre Dame would be playing Saturday. I don't care if it was Georgia or Alabama this coming Saturday. I think that they'd have a very good chance to win the football game. And because they're playing an SC team that I think is basically close to quitting, maybe not, but they're obviously disarmed a little bit with a redshirt freshman quarterback. But I think it's mostly Notre Dame. I don't think that people, you know, people who kind of, you know, these people who kind of talking about how Notre Dame's offense is terrible or whatever, well, they're just not paying attention. I mean, they're really just not paying attention. So
they're not. Now, there's a couple of things, though, that I think are interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, I know, Ed, you and I kind of traded some emails on this earlier, but for whatever reason, you know, Sierra Wood starts the year off in the doghouse, and I would argue probably hasn't really even gotten out of it completely. Now, he did get a majority of the carries on Saturday.
He got 11 carries.
He got 11, which was enough for him to get 150 yards.
Right.
But, you know, I think that in my eyes, he's clearly the better back, and I don't know that he has the hands that Riddick has as far as catching football out of the field. But what he does have is he has that ability, number one, to hit the crease, and number two, to get there.
Yeah, but out of it. Mike, I got to disagree with you. I think it's almost a toss-up because, I mean, he still does not get the tough yards the way that Riddick can. I mean, Riddick has gotten 1, 2, 3 yards after the initial hit so many times this year, and Sierra just doesn't do that. I mean, and he's a little bit shiftier, but he still makes some he still goes to the hole sometimes a little bit too fast. This is nitpicking, okay?
It is.
Sierra's a great back, but I think maybe you were right earlier this year, but I think it's pretty much a toss-up now. I just love the way that Theo runs, and his heart and soul is obviously into this. He's given us everything this year, and he's gotten some really tough yards after the first, second, and third hits. So, and I think he's just a tougher running back right now than Sierra. They both have their. I'm just glad we got them both because they're fantastic. But I would rate that a toss-up right now.
Yeah, they complement each other. What do you think, Coffee? I mean, where do you see that?
Well, I don't know. You hate to talk about focus and stuff like that, or things that aren't really obvious to someone who's not in the practice field or isn't actually in Wood's head. But it seems like that there are so many times that I watch Sierra Wood, and he just seems so tentative. It's such a he gets the ball, he's dancing around, and yeah, he breaks great runs a lot, but it seems like he'll break a great run, and then on the next play, it's kind of like dancing around and all that. I'd really like to see more consistency out of Sierra Wood. Riddick, I think every time he gets the ball, you know he's hitting the hole hard, he's focused, he's really pushing it, and from my vantage point on the couch, that's what it looks like. Now, it's very possible that maybe it's an inconsistency in blocking or something, who knows, but if I had to pick which one of the two I want to have the ball on third and one, I'm going to pick Riddick because I know that statistically speaking, I'm going to get the best run possible out of him on that play because I see it from him on more plays.
Yeah. All right, I'll just disagree with both of you guys and say that he should get the majority of the carries. But anyway,
what are you talking about? That's not even your favorite running back by a long shot.
It's not. But, you know, I thought it was very classy of Brian Kelly not to run it up against Wake Forest and have Cam McDaniel get the ball like 10 times in a row. But anyways, the other thing I think that we saw Saturday was just, you know, a little bit of a concern, but, you know, it's just that, that redshirt freshman in him. You know, whenever Golson sets his feet and steps forward and unleashes the ball, like we saw when he was on the far hash mark and threw it down and out where it looked like the DB was going to make a good play on the ball and yet the ball's right by him. He's got an unbelievable arm, a lot of athleticism, and can really wing it. When he starts throwing off his back foot, and it not only is his, do you lose the zip on the ball, but it's almost like his psyche is just out the window. You know, that interception he threw on the, and I would argue there was probably two balls that should have been intercepted. I mean, the jump ball to Eifert in the middle of the field, kind of down near the 10-yard line. I mean, that was all Eifert, 100% of them. And he actually missed Eifert on that play. Eifert was open early if he fires a dart in there. But in any event, you know, there's still that little bit of, oh, my God, Everett, what are you doing in him? Now, he's totally, like you said, light years ahead of where he was at the beginning of the season. But those are the little tiny things that, you know, in a big national championship game, turnovers matter. And that's about the only knock on Notre Dame's offense I think you can give them at this point. I mean, they, like you say, they are definitely light years ahead of where we were at the beginning of the season. And I do agree with you that as far as the college football landscape, Notre Dame is playing the best football the last couple of weeks and seems to be right in the thick of things because they are the best football team right now in America.
Well, about Golson, what I thought was kind of interesting was, you know, these comments last week about, you know, and Brian Kelly kind of putting film together of great quarterbacks and showing it to Golson. And I think what, again, I don't have any real evidence to back this up, but it seems to me that the thing with Golson has always been that that he maybe didn't take quite as seriously the preparation part of being a great quarterback. You know, the kind of the film study, the tendency study. And I think it was really interesting. Somebody asked a great question about, like, especially for Brian Kelly early in the year when the defense is dominating so well and kind of picking up the pieces for the offense and keeping them in games and really carrying the heavy part of the load. Does that breed any dissension or any resentment by the guys on the defensive side of the football that if the offense would just get its act together, we wouldn't have these nail biters down at the end and be struggling? And, you know, what he said was really instructive, that it's a team that's together, that they kind of support each other, that they really respect guys like Zach Martin and John Goodman, who they know they're in there fighting and trying. And look how it's paid off. And now the offense is carrying its share of the weight. And I think that that's kind of rubbed off on Golson, where he sees that, you know, he made these comments about watching Peyton Manning and kind of picking up habits and stuff. And as you know, being a great quarterback at the next level isn't just the athletic ability, the ability to sling it, the ability to even to make plays like Golson can with your feet. It's the ability to get to your reads that nanosecond faster than you did the week before, and to find the open guy and to see what the defense is throwing at you and just to pick up on those things. And you do it really in two ways. You do it with a lot of study, but you also just do it with playing. And he's starting to get a combination of the two things. And I think that that's all part of the development, not just of a quarterback, but of a leader, of a guy who's kind of getting a grip on, like, geez, if I play my best, nobody can touch us. You know, we're undefeated, and I'm not even scratching the surface of kind of my ability and my ability to prepare and my ability to lead. And that, to me, is what's exciting, because I think he's just going to continue to get better. And as he takes this job even more and more seriously and starts to become and his kind of instincts and his brain and his reaction start to catch up with his physical ability, I mean, the package is just awesome. So I think that's kind of what we're seeing, is he's kind of getting it on the leadership and on the preparation level, not just on the skills level. And I think that's what's making Brian Kelly and Chuck Martin real excited about this, and why they're trusting him with more, you know, with
option
and zone read and sprint outs and all this kind of stuff.
And I think that the other thing, Coffee, which seems that we talked about this at the end of last year, why we thought it was going to be Golson, but the thing that he is starting to do really well is, one, he will throw it away. He has really not taken a sack, I think, in the last, what, four games that I can remember. He's throwing the ball away at the right point, but the other thing is he's running the ball at the right point too. And when you do that, it just puts an unbelievable amount of pressure on the defense to be able to account for somebody scrambling like he does. Not only that, but when he does scramble, oftentimes he'll pull it up and hit somebody. And, you know, it almost seems like he's better outside of the pocket by scrambling, finding an open guy downfield and hitting him. But the amount of pressure that puts on the defense, which is why I think it gives Notre Dame cause for hope that, you know what, Alabama doesn't scare us at all. I don't care who they put out there.
He's also obviously – I'm sorry, Mike, real quick. He's also obviously improved his relationship with Eifert. Like, he finds him better. He finds him more.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right.
He's back in the offense, which is – sorry, Mike Coffey, go ahead.
No, that's I think you're absolutely right. One of the frustrating things for the beginning of the season, and I think we may have talked about this on an earlier show, is – he wasn't using his feet enough. There were too many situations where he was just standing back there in the pocket trying to find his receivers, and it's almost like he was being Tommy Rees in this offense. No offense to Tommy Rees, but that we thought he had using his feet is that dimension that really helps to overcome any shortcomings there might be in the offense. Just making the defense have to worry about what Golson's going to do with his feet is it's a game changer from the standpoint of the offense. You look at the offense we saw last year, other than the fact that we are running the ball a little bit more, but the passing plays are about the same. I think the difference is Golson's mobility keeps the defense shaken up enough that they can't necessarily put the blanket coverage on the receivers. They can't pin their ears back and rush the quarterback because they know he's not running anywhere. They have to think about more than one or two things, which increases exponentially the possibility that they're going to make a mistake, which is, I think that's where we're seeing a lot of our success is on offense, is the defense's inability to take one dimension away. With Tommy Rees, if you could take the medium range passes away, we were dead in the water. Well, now not only is Everett Golson's arm stronger and he can make the longer passes, he can also make things happen with his feet. So between that and relying more on a stable of outstanding running backs, I think that's the key difference we're seeing on offense this year.
Yeah, and it more evident than ever was in the Pittsburgh game when we got the ball on our own, 8-yard line, needing to score. And part of the reason we drove the length of the field was because on two occasions he scrambled for big yardage. And I think that just goes to show that like Ed was saying about everything that has been mentally going on with Golson and where he's at, it really shines a bright light on the job that, Brian Kelly and Chuck Martin. And I know Brian has taken a big, onus on getting, Golson's mental stability where it is. He spent a lot of time. It's been a big focus for him this year, and it's obviously paid off. Because certainly the execution level of Everett Golson is way ahead of where he was at the beginning of the year. And I don't, he's beyond the days of being pulled, at least let's hope so, from the standpoint of the mistakes and the misreads that he's been making. I mean, he's really, and I think Saturday's game was evident of it. He threw some great footballs. He made some great reads. And, is anytime you're finding your tight end and a guy like Eifert, then you're doing something right. So, hats off to them. And they're really, this is what's going to be fun is these last 2 weekends or this weekend against USC. Because I think that this team is only going up and, it's going to be a lot of fun if we can sit back and watch the rest of the season knowing that we're just waiting for whoever comes our way for the national championship.
Yeah. Knock on wood real quick. I've wanted to say this for like 3 or 4 weeks, but I haven't because I figured it would only cause problems, but you also got to, and they always make this comment and I don't know how true it is, but I think there has to be some truth to it, even though a lot of this is luck, but you got to tip your hat to the training staff and conditioning staff and weight staff because part of the reason of, having an undefeated season is being pretty, pretty lucky when it comes to injuries. Notre Dame's offensive line is pretty thin, depth wise. And going into the last game, I think I can say this because even if somebody gets hurt, they'll have some time to recover for the bowl game. But we've had, it seems like almost every Monday, it's like, we come out of it clean. I mean, obviously, DeVaris got hurt. And we had some tough injuries at the beginning of the season with Lowood and Jamoris. But, you know, besides a little tweak here or there and Kona sitting out and, you know, and Lewis getting sick. But, I mean, these guys have really held up well in some really physical close games. I mean, this is really – isn't this Wake Forest game really the only game since Navy that's been over by halftime? I mean, we just haven't had any of those. So yeah, these guys have held up really well, and it's a real credit to Longo and his group for keeping these guys in such terrific condition down the stretch. I mean, they looked fantastic, and you know, that's a part of going undefeated too.
Yeah, that, and I think that the other thing we've noticed is in the fourth quarter, you've seen the other teams. But, you know, they're just put hands on their knees and they're breathing heavy. And, you know, that's just the mark of a good football team, somebody that can take over in the fourth quarter because physically they're just beating you up. And it certainly has been that case this year for Notre Dame. So that's hats off to them is right. They've unbelievable, really. I mean, it's just unbelievable. All right, good deal. We'll leave it there. Should be a lot of fun. We haven't done preview shows. Maybe we should keep up with that. We've been undefeated, so maybe that's not a bad idea. But we'll try and get one, and we'll see how it goes. It's almost too much fun now. In any event, you've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanik and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.